Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave. Woohoo! It's just one of those kinds of days where you have to say a woohoo. It's the beginning of February, for heaven's sake. I know that a few days have passed by, but here we are, the first Tuesday of a new month, and you know, there's a lot going on this month. Black History Month, Valentine's Day month, a lot of artists that are doing their thing all of a sudden have new projects. I'm reeling at the news. Honestly, it's just been one kind of joyful little surprise after another recently with folks that we know. I love this trend. Please, can we keep this going? One of those artists that seems to have good news no matter where he turns these days is the gentleman that we're going to have on the show next hour, Daryl Yokley. He's one of these young men, 32 years old as of the past 48 hours, yes, and his dad's birthday immediately follows his. Daryl has lived in a lot of places, originally from California, but my gracious, has he been involved in music from an early age and has really made some powerful strides. Once you hear Daryl Yokley's Sound Reformation and The Void, you'll hear what I'm talking about. As is the usual case, we start our show, just because we like to do a classic at the beginning, with something from a long time ago, Lil Hardin Armstrong. We celebrate her today. It was her birthday past couple of days. Yeah, actually born on the 3rd of February, 1898. And if there wasn't a Lil Armstrong, there wouldn't have been a Louis Armstrong. Keep that in mind. We'll tell you more. This is East Town Boogie on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. Hybrid Jazz.
Thank you.
gorgeous? Doesn't it feel like spring? Oh, my gosh. There's something joyful about the song anyway. If you remember back, 1975, Orleans, co-founded by John Hall and his wife at that time, Joanna Hall. They wrote a song called Dance With Me. Shawn Michael Ray heard it back a long time ago and loved it, just loved it. Now, here's the thing that's such a kick. First of all, that's Tony Hightower on vocals, who has such a career. His mom and himself, between those two, they have carved out forays into different kinds of creative endeavors, especially in the Georgia area. But Tony has exploded far beyond that. And, of course, now Sean is living in Atlanta, so he has access to all of these wonderful musicians in that region. Sean did such a great job with that bass line here. Oh, my. And he and I were corresponding a little bit this morning. I'm not sure if he knows this, but doing the research, I really thought that John Hall had passed away. For some reason, I got him confused with somebody else. Turns out that John Hall had left Orleans, group disbanded. There was a divorce, John and Joanna, and he went into politics. He was a congressman in New York for several years, and then he got out of the political life. He has always been an environmental activist, so he's still doing that. Getting back to music now, and he sometimes does this thing with his current wife. They've created some songs together as well. Turns out that Joanna Hall and I grew up down the street from one another. It's crazy. In Montgomery County and Bucks County. She was in Levittown. I was in Jenkintown. I had no idea. So you find out that these favorites along the way have roots to where your roots are, and it's just mind-blowing. And it just makes sense how the songs resonate to you through the years because something clicked and you weren't sure why. Love it. Woo! Shawn Michael Ray right there from Overdue, which you need to pick up because it is just so beautifully eclectic, hybrid, if you will, something for everybody. And to remake something like that, a pop classic, and breathe new life into it, Tony Hightower, good job, Sean. Hanlon Park Jazz, that was the middle song that we heard. Yes, sir, yes, ma'am, from Stone Cold Jazz. That's the name of the project back in 2010. Johnny Shaw at the helm of HPJ. He wanted to do something to celebrate Chick Webb. Johnny loved the idea since he's a Baltimore native. So is Chick Webb. Chick, born actually the 10th of February, 1905, 1907. We're not quite sure of that because records back then were a little bit skewed. But we did know that he was born in Baltimore. He also died in Baltimore at 39. He had tuberculosis of the spine when he was a tiny guy, and he actually remained tiny. He was hunched over. And the doctors had suggested strongly to him that he play drums so that he could stretch his limbs as much as possible. He became an unbelievable jazz and swing drummer. I'm telling you what, his story is so mesmerizing. When Artscape, a festival that we have in the summer here in Baltimore, was kicking, doesn't kick as much now because they don't have jazz. They don't have the Billie Holiday vocal competition, put a bookmark in that thought, or the Chick Webb competition. They need to do that all over again because that's when folks from everywhere came to Artscape. It was named that particular competition, and Hanlon Park Jazz was in it, had some great judges who determined what was the best group of that particular year. So, Johnny thought it would be so wonderful to just pay homage to Chick, one of his favorites ever. If you get to see, have a little time, go to YouTube and check out Hanlon Park Jazz and that song that you heard, Stompin' at the Savoy, one of a Chick Webb's Best Classics when he was part of the house band at the Savoy in New York. We heard Lil Hardin Armstrong. I could go on for days. I won't, I promise. Lil had a birthday. We celebrated that yesterday, 1898. She was born, and what she did in her life as a female pioneer, she was a powerful woman in the early days of jazz. What you heard was Easttown Boogie from Chicago, the Living Legends. She is one of them. Very interesting gal. Her mom didn't like the idea of the crowd that her daughter might find herself in the company of. Didn't like the idea that Lil's tendencies were toward blues, which progressed into jazz, gosh knows. Had a chance to work in a store, a music store, and she played the piano. And did she ever learn quickly? A lot of folks were taking notice. She was called a Hot Lil Lil, Hot Lil, because she was just so amazing on that keyboard. And she got married, but she met Louis Armstrong. And I don't know what the specific circumstances were, but Lil got divorced, and she helped Louis get his divorce. They got married, had one of, while it lasted, the coolest marriages ever. Lil made Louis less country, turned his world around so he could focus on what was important, how to progress his career. She was his manager. Things were not exactly sweet between them sometimes because Louis, like many men at the time, had a wandering eye. And Lil was real jealous. But I'll tell you what, this is how their relationship stood the test of time. He always loved her, even though he found somebody else. And she always loved him. 2 months after Louis passed away in 1971, Lil died. Just an amazing love story, and one that you need to do research on yourself, because you're going to find something that will put a tear in your eye. I'm not kidding. Daryl Yokley, next hour. We've got some great music from Daryl Yokley's Sound Reformation. The Void is what the CD is called, his debut. Something else, I'm telling you. This particular gentleman has a debut album also out last year. It's still new since we're just in February now, so we can call it new. Harold Lopez Nussa from Cuba. Whew! So nice. From the album New Day, Buenos Modales on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Might remember Carenza Gray. She was with us last year on Hybrid Jazz. She is right up the road in Pennsylvania, and that was from her CD a couple of years back called Bliss, Bossa Lady, full of tracks, so meaningful. Carenza has really become a terrific writer through the years, and actually she started out wowing people on the violin. She was in middle school and working with Frostburg State University and their orchestra, and she thought that was going to be her life's mission, but she discovered that she had a voice. And how? Because remember when I told you about Artscape about 10 minutes or so ago? Well, Carenza won the 20th annual Billie Holiday Vocal Competition when Artscape in Baltimore had that comp. And that was the last competition that they had. They made some changes. Oh, just so annoying. I could talk for a while about this, and we're hoping to reverse that situation, but I'll keep that private for now. But Carenza really has made some inroads. She's always working. Whenever she plays, she makes new friends. Really an amazing work here. If you get a chance to go to CarenzaGray.com or find CD Baby or Reverb Nation, the name of the project is called Bliss. Produced, by the way, by Eric Copeland with Gary Lunn on bass and Tom Hemby on guitar. Just ace Nashville-based folks there that decided to bring Carenza to the South so they could get those fabulous Tennessee musicians. You know, they're congregated in certain pockets of the U.S., and having lived in Nashville twice, having worked in country radio, I know that it's a lot more than country. It's also pop and blues and jazz, rhythm and blues. Oh, my gosh. The town is just rife with talent, and Carenza got some of the best of the best right there. Spira Gyra, South Beach. Dreams Beyond Control is the name of the CD back in 1993. Yeah. If you can believe it, Spira Gyra will be celebrating their 40th anniversary this year. Yes. And it's been 35 years since Morning Dance. That was their only platinum album, and this is what the guys are doing. In select cities this year, Spira Gyra will play the whole of Morning Dance. Then they'll take a break at the show. Then they'll come back with other tunage. I love that. All the information is at the website. I'm really tickled because they're going to be at Burke's Jazz this year. They won't be doing the Morning Dance concert. They'll be doing something different. But whenever you see Spira Gyra in concert, you are assured of your money's worth. They are just captivating. And again, have to make mention of the fact that Scott Ambush, the bass player, is from Baltimore. I'm just saying. A lot of rich musical history in this town. And Spira Gyra will tell you that too, because they know. Not from Baltimore, from Havana, Held Lopez Nusa. From New Day, released last year, just 31 years old. Classical piano early at the age of 8, focused on the more traditional aspects of the piano, then played with pop and jazz and traditional Cuban musicians, has become just amazing. Done orchestra work, composes music for movies. The song that you heard was Buenos Modales, which translates into good manners. And it would be less than good manners if I told you that Harold is award-winning. Yes, he is, the age of 31. Just very interesting. He has a Facebook page. If you want to go and like that, I strongly suggest that you do, because we'll be hearing more from Harold. And we'll be hearing a lot from Dow Yokely coming up next hour, less than 15 minutes now. I thought that I would play a contrast. I really don't know, and we'll find out, who the inspirations were for Daryl when he first started saxophone at a young age. He got inspired when he was making the move. He's originally from California, moved to North Carolina. A particular professor wowed him with how this prof played the saxophone. So we'll find out who the early inspirations were for Daryl. Now, I know that there's been many a guest on Hybrid Jazz who has said that this particular gentleman is one of theirs. Some will say that he probably has some of the best tone that ever was in jazz. That's arguable, certainly, but you can't dismiss the fact that Stan Getz is a legend. This is Blue Skies on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz. Back-to-back, Stan Getz first and Blue Skies right into Daryl Yokely's Sound Reformation and Jubilee. How's that for happy from the CD The Void? And standing by right on time, bless his heart. You know, sometimes I rail about the youngins because sometimes they're not on time, but Darryl Yokley's been around a block or two. Seriously, we're going to have to find out from him what is the story, because this man has lived in possibly more places than I have, and I'm two times as old as he is. Amazing journey at the age of 32. This is a young man who is steeped in absolute, hardcore, fabulous education, so he's got that footing. Classical saxophone, turned on at a young age by some inspirations, went on to find the passion in jazz, and here in the classical in his head, here in the jazz in his heart, he combined what he heard and made his own music. He is also an instructor. He's also a songwriter, and we're going to find out a whole lot more about him. We've been corresponding for months, but this is the first time I will have heard his voice. This is Darryl Yokley. Hey, Darryl, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Look at you. This is the first time we've talked. Whoa!
I know. it's been a minute, but I'm glad to finally get a chance to speak with you.
Me too. Oh, my gosh. I have to ask you right from jump. I'm so tickled when I read your bio. I've read it a few times now in preparation for the show. Do you sometimes wake up and say to yourself, where am I? You've lived in so many places.
Oh, yeah, I've lived a couple different places. I'm hoping to make the New York area my long-term home for a while at least. So
oh, yeah,
we'll see
definitely.
Let's see how that turns out.
You definitely have to do that, Darryl, because honestly, at your age, and by the way, I said it on Facebook, but I'll say it again, happy birthday to you.
Yay. Oh, thank you so much.
And happy birthday to Dad the day after. How about that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was his gift, I guess, about 32 years ago at this point now.
Yeah. Yeah, tell your dad it's never over until you get your last present, and you were it for that year.
Exactly. Yeah, so well, we get a chance to celebrate all the time together, which is nice.
Oh, that really is cool. You have, at this particular age, lived a life that some people older have lived. So, you know, in making your way from West Coast to South to Mid-Atlantic to East Coast, you really know where you're supposed to be, and New York is it, because lest anybody not know this, you've done a lot of work at this age, and you want to go through the litany? I mean, I've got everything written down, but you had a great education, first of all, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I had some great instructors at Duquesne University and at Michigan State. So it was definitely a lot of schooling happening. And actually before
yeah.
that, too, in high school as well, which is I'm very thankful for.
And you play flute and clarinet as well as sax, don't you?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. So, yeah, it helps out with doubling. I remember when I got out of grad school, I was doing a lot of stuff with the Four Tops and Temptations, and that one required flute. So I was thankful that I had that education and that experience of being able to double, because it helped me get that gig.
And that's so funny, too, because here you are, seriously classically trained, in love with jazz and hardcore jazz. And what happens when you get out of Michigan? You find work with the Temptations, Four Tops, and the OJs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
It's funny how life works out. Yeah, I never expected it, but I was very, very thankful for that experience and for that money coming out of school also.
So you got to work with Eddie LaVert.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I mean, there's like, you know, these groups at this point are comprised of like new members and just like, and whatchamacallit, and a lot of, not a lot, I'm sorry, like maybe one original member. So like it's kind of a blur, like who's actually an original member now.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
That does happen because, you know, Dennis Edwards had a birthday the other day on Facebook, and I had to go back and figure out where in the Temptations line he came in, because, you know, some of these guys pass away, and then some leave, and you just don't know. The same thing has happened with pop and rock groups. They still have the original names, as you know, but it's not the same flavor at all. It's just a different vibe entirely.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have been playing with those groups, you know, in their heyday, you know, when Motown was, you know, the real big deal that it was, you know. That would have been quite an experience and time to live in, I think.
Oh, my gosh,
it was definitely
yes.
fun still playing with it, yeah. I still have fun playing those tunes that I grew up hearing because of my parents, and I got a chance to play with them, so it was definitely a fun experience for me.
So do you consider yourself to be Daub? You've done so much work now, and you've lived in North Carolina. You went to Pittsburgh to study with the teacher who inspired you, and I want to ask you about that a little bit later. And then in Philly, my hometown, so you and I both know a lot about Philly. Do you feel like an old soul, or do you feel like a young spirit at this young age? What do you feel like? Do you feel like you've amassed a lot? Do you feel as if you're intuitive to your music, or is it just fresh for you when you create it in your mind? I'm asking a lot of questions there, aren't I?
No, it's okay. I think I've gotten smarter in my approaches about how I want to grow at this point. And I'm only 32, but, you know, I definitely feel like I've grown a lot, especially in my New York years, like as far as like the directions I want to take and how I want to go about doing it. But the music thing, it's always a fresh thing, and I think that's the thing that keeps me motivated is, you know, tapping into new territory and not sure what's going to be around the next corner, I guess. So, I mean, I guess that's what makes me get up in the morning and try to figure that out, you know?
Well, listening to The Void, you know, sometimes you have to gauge the importance of the first reaction when you hear the music. And you know what one of the first things I thought of when I heard the tunes that you sent me?
Oh, okay.
I thought of young Ornette Coleman to a certain extent.
Oh, okay, nice. Oh, really? Yeah. I got quite a couple different reactions from the album. Some people thought it was like it had an old Blue Note, Art Blakey feel, and, you know, some people you know, I heard influences of Wayne Shorter and stuff in there. So it's kind of nice to hear these people's different reactions of what they take on it. So I never heard Ornette, but I'm very honored to be in that that kind of company.
Oh, definitely. You know, I really appreciate those who, and usually it happens when an artist is older, but when someone knows about music as much as you do, because it's not only your education, but in the long times that you've played now, because you've put in a lot of work, when you grasp the notion of free-forming it or letting it go, letting your sax explore the territory, and then coming back home, as if you're playing baseball and you're making the rounds for each of the bases, and you don't know if you're going to go to third base, and you got to wait for that ball to come to gauge whether you're going to make it in time, and then you round home. That's what your music reminds me of. Oh, where is Daryl going? Oh, he's going there. Okay. And then it comes back, and you are really satisfied, because it's like a musical journey with each song. That's a pretty cool thing.
Oh, thanks. And that was a big goal in this album was, you know, to have it, you know, never be stagnant at any point, so that the listener's always enjoying, you know, each song, and then the CD as a whole, hopefully, where it starts out with the first track and takes you through all nine tracks, and you feel as if you progress, you know, with each track.
You did, and it's really interesting that, and again, I bring up your age just because I'm really fascinated. When someone is your age, you don't have the confines that others who are older had. So what a pleasant surprise, because Daryl, as you know, I had a few tracks and then you sent me the CD. So I'm listening to The Coming of Shiva. And I love that track, because you explored roots that weren't necessarily in association with what I knew about you. I know what Shiva means, and I don't know how you meant it, but it was exotic. It sounded like something from another country, and you were very reminiscent of a friend of mine who's on the Baltimore Jazz Alliance Board of Directors with me, Todd Marcus. Todd is one of these guys. He looks like the guy next door, but he's got Egyptian roots. So he has made it a point to get involved with his father's music and explore that. And that's what The Coming of Shiva reminded me of. I thought, oh, my God, he's being fearless on top of being so doggone proficient on that sax. It was great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I know. Todd from a couple of engagements. He's definitely a very almost innovative composer. You know, I'm glad to be in that company name with him too. But yeah, Coming to Shiva is definitely one of our most requested songs when we go out to perform, and it's become, I guess, one of my favorites too. Just it's simple, but it gives you a chance to really explore, it really frees you up to express yourself, I feel like, and more so than some of the other tunes I wrote. Like, I think that's why it has a real dear place in my heart for me when I play it.
What was the inspiration for that song? I'm very curious.
That one kind of came about in an awkward manner. I was listening to there's a group, group with Oren Evans, Eric Ravenson, Nasheed Waits, and on that CD, I think they had Stacey Dillard and J.D. Allen, the first Tar Baby CD, and there was a tune on there, and I just heard like maybe a 2-second idea that Eric Rivas played on his bass, and it kind of made me come up with that bass line that you can hear throughout the whole song. And then from that, I wrote a melody, and then I was like, oh, this sounds kind of dark. So I came up with the idea of The Coming of Shiva, you know, the goddess of destruction. I think it's the goddess of destruction in Hindu religion. And then, you know, she also, I think, symbolizes rebirth. So a lot of these things were kind of going through my mind as I wrote this tune. So I wanted to have a title and then a tune that kind of portrayed this image. So it's a lot built into that tune.
Well, you know what? I went in an opposite direction. Having in the past few years discovered that my maternal great grandmother has roots in Israel, I thought of sitting Shiva, which is what Jewish people do in many instances culturally after someone has passed away. So my mind went there. So there's a few different directions that folks can go to when they hear the song, which is, again, very cool, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's great. I like hearing the different interpretations that your people come up with. It's always fascinating for me. I think all composers, too, because we have our ideas of what we're doing when we compose, but then, you know, we're kind of curious to see how it comes across to audiences and what might be interpreted and how they might interpret it, I guess. You know, it's enjoyable for me.
It must be a high, not being a musician myself, but it must be something that is indescribably joyful to you to know that people take songs personally and you write them personally, and they have a connection with something that you didn't intend. But when you hear that interpretation, suddenly it's incorporated into your memory, and you've got a different way of playing it.
Oh, yes, you know, because all these experiences, you know, shape us as human beings. So, you know, next time I play that tune, I might remember this, you know, this conversation we're having right now and go up and check out the different meanings of Shiva and see that probably make its way into the music as well, you know. So thank you in advance for the extra inspiration.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, listen, could you, you've got a little bit of time for me today, right?
I sure do, yes.
Okay. Could we hear the coming of Shiva from the void? Is that cool?
Oh, that's fine, yes.
Okay. So I want folks to hear the different textures of Daryl Yokley, our guest today on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. This is from Daryl Yokley's Sound Reformation from The Void. man, I can't even say the imagery that comes into someone's head listening that. That is Daryl Hilkley's Sound Reformation from the Void, The Coming of Shiva. Daryl, I wanted you to sit through all 9.5 minutes of that just to remind yourself of how good you are.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's definitely nice hearing that is a nice trip down memory lane for me.
Do you know, honestly, it's like having a trip and never leaving the farm when you hear that song, because it's like this triumphal march into the Mideast. It reminds me, here we go, back in time, long before you were even thought of, but it reminds me of something that would have been so suitable in the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston. That's how powerful that song is.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I actually have seen that one. It definitely makes sense to me.
Man. And then the interplay of musicianship. Whoa. You all sounded so in tune to one another, anticipating moves. You want to brag on your band, please?
Oh, yes. You know, I mean, the band on this album was definitely, you know, the perfect fit. I can't say enough about those guys. You know, you have Dwayne Eubanks on trumpet, George Burning was on piano, and C.B. Lucas Curtis on bass, and Wayne Smith Jr. On drums. It's just, you know, we all have been friends, particularly George and Wayne and I, because we spent some time together in Philly before I moved up to New York, and then I met Dwayne and Luquez and started hanging out with them more once I made my move up to the city. So it's, you know, those bonds of friendship definitely come out in when we play, you know, whether it's live or on a recording, it definitely permeates the music a lot. And they're great musicians, you know, so it makes it easier and much more enjoyable, yeah.
And it just sounds when you have that kind of camaraderie, not only socially but musically, it's just so fluid. Oh my gosh, when I hear trumpet and sax together in a way that positions itself like that from that song, it just sounds like ancient, but then it sounds so fresh and new, but there's something jubilant about the way that both are intermeshing with each other. This is something that you can't fake, and this is something that doesn't come overnight unless there are some rare circumstances. So you found the right kind of cohesiveness for this CD. You must be really proud.
Oh, yes. You know, especially, you know, Dwayne and I have a very good rapport as far as a trumpet saxophone duo frontline. You know, it's very easy to play with him and blend with him, and it's always a joy sharing the bandstand with him as well.
I'll bet.
Yeah. So we were looking forward to the next project. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And, you know, I didn't even think to ask about that. Is that something that's definitely in the works for maybe this year or next?
Yes, you know, we're in the process of trying to, you know, get together and start rehearsing this music, and then hopefully we'll be in the studio later this year, and that recording is going to be a different kind of setup. It's basically, I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe it. It's a album that's going to be even more ethnic than The Coming of Shiva, because it's all music that's influenced by African music and culture, you know.
Oh!
So, it's been a lot of fun for me. It's kind of been like directing a movie in a lot of sense.
Oh, cool. I like to hear that. So that's just something that evolved naturally, or that's your idea, or were you in discussion with Dwayne about it, or something that you've wanted to do for a while?
You know, there was a tune I wrote, and, it lent itself to that kind of vibe, and then I I just started getting more interested in African music. I randomly picked up a CD at the library and heard some of the influences, and I started hearing music like that. So I just this project kind of, the seed was planted years ago when I wrote that tune, and now it's formed into a full-on project. And you know, this next recording is going to be myself, Dwayne, and then another great pianist, Zakai Curtis, who's actually brother Lucas. So I have the Curtis brothers in the mix.
Oh my.
On the CD. Yeah, and then Wayne will be back with us on drums, but then we're also going to be adding Nasheed Waits, incredible drummer I've always wanted to play with. So he's going to be in there as well. So I'm really looking forward to this, and it's going to be exciting. And hopefully if we get the budget for it and all things work right and the stars line up, we might even be able to do the original version that I'm envisioning, which involves like a small wind ensemble accompaniment to the music, which will be nice. I get, it really shows me blending my classical influence with my current, I guess, jazz endeavors, if so to speak.
Oh, nice. Well, we've got something built in for you here. First thing that popped into my head when you said this, because this notion is new for me to hear from you. We have a huge museum in the heart of Baltimore, the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of African American Culture. And one of my friends is the volunteer. She coordinates these groups to take tours. So they have music performances all the time. And it would be just really wonderful to incorporate a situation whereby especially young people hearing you, finding and exploring different ways to express African influence in your music, that would be awesome.
Oh, yeah, we would, you know, that's kind of some of the things I'm looking at as well, is finding, you know, art museums, historical museums, as other venues to present this. I actually have a lot of, like, a myriad of ideas as far as this project. It's going to be a very intricate and involved project. I think this is kind of equivalent to, I guess, what a movie director would go through with the music, and then also, you know, thinking about imagery. A lot of things are going through the mind right now as far as this project.
Wow, I like it. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, I'm enjoying every moment of it. It's definitely going to be a different thing than I think anything that's come out before. I don't want to be, I guess, too presumptuous, but I think it's going to be way different than a lot of things that have come before it. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting it out there, but I'm going to take my time at the same time. So I'm hoping to get it off the ground and record it this year, but if not, then it's time that I think we need for a good product.
So did you even have this idea this time last year, Daryl, or is this something that's new as of the past maybe several months?
Oh, I had this idea around last year, maybe actually probably even before that. And to be honest, I have like about 3 or 4 albums planned out in my head right now. It's just a matter of getting the time and the budget for all these ideas. I need to, I'm going to hopefully be applying for and hopefully winning some grants for these ideas to make them come into fruition and everything.
Wonderful. Oh my gosh, that's very cool. I wanted to ask you about the transition that you made. You lived in California. You were born and raised there, but you, at the age of 14, is that correct, you moved to North Carolina?
Yes, my dad's job transferred over to there, and at the time I was kicking and screaming, but it wound up being the best thing for me.
Yeah, because that's where you met the professor that would pretty much change your concept of saxophone, right?
Yeah, I remember the first time I heard him in Lenoir, North Carolina. It was definitely a life-changing experience, you know, hearing the saxophone play like that. And, you know, that was one of those times, I think probably yeah, maybe the first time when I heard someone live there, I got goosebumps and my heart was racing, and I was like, oh, that's what I want to do, you know. So after that, I kind of decided that I wanted to be a musician. Probably that's like my sophomore year. Yeah.
And then, isn't that a blessing? You were able to find the means, whatever it took, to get to Duquesne, where this professor was, to study with him. Is that right, too?
Yes, because at that clinic, you know, I met him and I played for him, and he told me I needed to come up to his retreat in the mountains in North Carolina. He held a saxophone retreat that's actually still going.
Wow.
James Bullock saxophone retreat, yeah. So, you know, I went there in high school, and then I auditioned, and it wound up being the only school I auditioned at, and I was lucky to get in.
That's really something. Whoa. And then
yeah.
You have another similar story. You met a particular artist in Philadelphia, and you didn't know if you had the guts, whatever it took, to go up and talk to him, found out that he was really cool, and he said that he would be on a particular project you were doing. You want to explain that?
I'm trying to believe it. I think it's there's a couple of people I was scared to talk to, so I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was Tim Warfield or maybe Dwayne Eubanks, because I remember the first time I met Dwayne in Orleans, I was kind of reticent to talk to him as well.
Dwayne, yeah. I know Tim Warfield. That name would have stuck in my head because Tim and I have spoken on a couple of occasions, and I absolutely adore him. But Dwayne, and then you found out how cool he was, and then he said, sure, I'll be on the CD.
Oh, yes, you know, I was like, oh, thank goodness, you know. you know, we've been playing together ever since. Probably the first time I put the original group together was 2010, and then I made it a quintet like in the spring of 2011. I think the first gig he played on was in March. And since then, you know, he's always been in there pretty much.
Wow, isn't that something, how things go? You're in a place where you have an admiration for someone. You think to yourself, okay, I got to talk to him even though I'm swallowing my own tongue. And then it turns out better than you ever anticipated.
Oh, yes, and we talk all the time now. As a matter of fact, I talked to him earlier, right before we had the interview. So, who knows, maybe he's listening now. We'll see.
Wow. Well, listen, I want to tell you that we have a fellow musician in the chat room. This is my friend Matt Williams, who is a singer and a trumpet player and is involved in big bands. And he would like to know who your favorite big band artist is, because he noticed that you have arranged for big bands.
Oh, okay. As far as big band, you know, I had great admiration for like Dave Holland's writing in his big band. I listened to him a lot, I guess, in my grad school years when I was studying with Derek Gardner, and he kind of did a lot of he influenced me quite a bit with my writing. Gil Evans was another major influence. Duke Ellington, of course. And then, as far as its influences of my writing, I guess those would be some of the dominant ones, influences. And I studied with Derek Gardner in grad school, and then Mike Tamaro in undergrad at Duquesne University. So all these kind of just mixed in the pot for as far as influences on writing. We're talking about my influences for writing, or just like just in general, my favorite big band artist.
Favorite big band artist, because Matt is completely smitten with the concept of big bands. And you know, when Matt, who is a seasoned vet, sees somebody who is young and so involved in different facets of jazz, mm-hmm. and writing and arranging, he is just like over the moon. He's got to ask questions.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, as far as big bands out there now, they seem to be making a comeback now, which is nice to see. You know, I definitely like I said, I mentioned before, Dave Holland and Captain Black Big Band seems to be doing a lot of great things. I was a member in there for a little bit of time when I first moved to New York, and they're still doing amazing things and kind of pushing the envelope on writing and playing. So, you know, those are probably some ensembles that stick out in my mind right now. And Christian McBride's Big Band is another one that is doing some great things. And the Mingus Bin Band, you know, these are some bands that I really admire and have a lot of respect for. And I might come out of retirement soon and start writing another arrangement, but I got a kind of a lot of on my plate at the moment, but I'm looking to try to do some arrangements.
I know you do, because you're teaching as well. How is your schedule as far as that's concerned, and are we eating it up?
Oh, no. Today's my day to write and practice. You know, I actually cut off a day of teaching just so I could have more time to dedicate towards the performance aspect of things. And it's definitely a hard balance because I live, you know, like I said, in the New York area, but then I teach down at Westminster Conservatory in the Princeton area. So it's like you have to factor in travel time. So it's kind of can be a little tiring at times, I guess, is the best way. But, you know, I have some great students down there, and they make the trip worthwhile.
Yeah, I did think about that, and I hesitated to ask because, you know, sometimes, and especially when there's somebody like you with so many different places that you have lived, when you go to your Facebook page, it says New York City, that's a home base, but I didn't know if I could actually keep up with you, Daryl. I didn't know if you were now living in Princeton or you're making the commute. And so if you're doing that and several times a week, you do need a day off.
Oh, yes. You know, hopefully it'll come. But right now I got a couple concerts coming up with Sound Reformation. We're playing for a Black History event on the 23rd in Darien, Connecticut. You know, so I'm over here getting some of the music that we plan on recording for the album. I'm working that more into sets now. So, you know, I'm over here planning out that program. Then I have a couple classical concerts in April and May with a small saxophone duo ensemble that I play in. That's in April. And then I have a solo concert in May. So I have music that I got to learn now because my time is going to be constrained down the road, you know. So I had to plan ahead.
Oh, you definitely do. Yeah. Well, and you know, you've got to take the time to savor what happens to you along the way, because you're going to be in more demand because of your versatility. So brace yourself for 2014, Daryl.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to the challenge. I've been changing my diet and exercising more, too, so that's been factored into the schedule now so I can have the energy to keep up with all of this.
Good. That's good.
Yeah.
And we mentioned your professor, and I'm glad that you said his name and talked about those circumstances. But there was something for you back in California that made you interested in the saxophone to begin with. So what was that? What were those early stirrings? Who made the instrument kind of click to you? And you said to yourself, okay, that's it. I want to do that.
You know, it's really weird. I'm not sure exactly where it started. I hate to admit this, and now that I know more about music, but in my younger days, you know, having just, you know, in the car rides with my parents and stuff, you know, I had they put on Kenny G, and that, I guess he was like the hot thing in the moment. It was like, oh, I want to play soprano sax, but then I had to start out on alto. But now that I'm older, like I said, it's like one of those embarrassing things. Like you look back at pictures of yourself with awkward clothes and hairdos as a kid. It's kind of like one of those things for me now.
Oh, Daryl! Hey, listen, let me tell you something, and I know because I've seen some of those posts on Facebook. I love Kenny G because he brought saxophone to a lot more people and introduced them to jazz when they wouldn't have listened. So
yeah, exactly. You know, so it's kind of like the double-edged sword. You know, you can't really hate on it too much because you're right. He did it. Bring the instrument's popularity to new heights at the time, especially, you know.
Yeah, and there's something to be said. You know, a lot of people don't necessarily know this, but when he was a teenager, for him to be invited to the group Love Unlimited, that says a lot because he had some serious chops. It's just that he preferred to go a more melodic route, and it turns out that that's what people wanted. I mean, we're not necessarily going to argue with success here, I know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, when you own Starbucks, it's kind of hard to argue the success.
Well, there is, yes, he did get those early shares, didn't he?
Yeah, so, you know, I can't even compare as far as that goes. You know, he won that battle.
Man, and then on top of that, he's absolutely phenomenal at golf. So whenever he plays a celebrity golf tournament, he cleans up in that direction too. And now, look, I'm going to be really nice because he's a single man now. And don't you think I haven't thought about this, Daryl?
Oh, I wish you the best of luck with that. That'd be definitely a great catch.
Man, are you kidding? He lives right next door to Barbara Streisand, so look, this is a pretty good neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's definitely in good company there, yeah.
I'll say this, and then we'll stop talking about Kenny G, but having spent a little time with him because he came to do a concert when the former radio station where we worked was kicking in Baltimore, this is what struck me about him. He didn't necessarily know that people were looking. He was just doing his thing backstage, and he was very nice to the program director and me. But he got introduced to someone that apparently was someone from his past. Now, you and I have both seen artists that are very dismissive of people and don't have a lot of time and maybe shoo people off because they're busy or they're tense about the upcoming concert. Kenny went out of his way to make sure that this guy felt comfortable and hugged him and said, "I appreciate you coming so much. It's so wonderful to see you." We didn't know if Kenny remembered him or not, but you would have thought it was long lost kin. So,
oh, wow, yeah. That's always a good thing to do that one. Yeah.
That's a big deal, you know. And so I want you to take a page from the Kenny G songbook here. And Daryl, always remember that. Be good to the people who say that they remember you, even though they might be lying through their teeth.
Oh, yeah. You've always got to be rooted in where you come from, definitely. You know, that's good to hear that, too.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
When you see it in front of you and people don't know that they have an audience, it's what people do behind closed doors or what charitable endeavors that he has done, which are a few. But when you keep quiet about it and be just good to mankind, that means a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, most definitely. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, the energy that you put out will always come back to you, you know,
yes.
Whether it's good or bad, you know. So I always try to be conscious of that myself, you know. I really do, I guess, embrace that concept.
Well, apparently it's working for you because you have a lot of friends and fans. That's obvious from your Facebook page because when that post was on your page a few days ago, Sunday, and people responded to it, there were a lot of people responding to your picture and the content of your biography. It feels pretty good at this point, doesn't it, Daryl?
Yeah, you know, it's. I feel like every year my growth as an artist is getting better, and then I guess subsequently, you know, the career is going to get better with that too, you know, and then just the rewards that I get out of just, you know, being able to do what I love to do and make a living at it is a great thing.
Yeah, how
honestly,
about that?
Yeah, you know, yeah, you know it's, I mean, a lot of people, you know, they make a lot of money, but they're not necessarily happy with what they do. And yeah, I think that's a thing that's not really valued in society as much is, you know, finding something that makes you happy. And I'm very thankful that I am able to do that.
And you're creative at doing it because it's not only the bigger band, but I am so intrigued by Odd Men Out. Tell us about that. That's so cool.
Oh yes, that's another project. You know, it's that one wound up just out of circumstance because my friend Chris Hemingway, he was a big inspiration for me and as a undergrad student because he was a senior when I got to Duquesne, and it was nice to see someone who could do both classical and jazz well. And you know, he definitely inspired me as a young saxophonist coming into college, and then, you know, I graduated, we stayed in contact over the years, and then in 2009, we were talking, I said, man, I'm about to move to New York, and he's like, oh, I don't have anything going on in Pittsburgh. I was like, well, we should move to New York together, so we did, and we got our first apartment in Brooklyn, and then we just started playing together, and that's how that started out. But actually, I'm skipping some vital information. We did a concert on my graduate recital at Michigan State, and he came in to play it along with Tim Adams, who's the former principal timpani player for the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. And that's how that group started. Yeah, so it's a interesting history because we played that concert, but then it'd be another 3 years before Chris and I hooked up and started playing in a capacity of doing classical music on a regular.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is great. And you know, the concert in April is actually us performing at a private house in Princeton. You know, where we're doing Mozart and Beethoven, and then we're doing a world premiere from a piece that was composed for us by Pittsburgh composer Suzanne Pollock. So we're looking forward to premiering that.
Wow, that's exciting. So that's going to be a private affair. Is there possibly going to be a public situation where people can come and see you?
You know, we're working on it. It's, you know, the only real problem with classical saxophone is just getting people to take the chance on being accepting of it. So, you know, we're always looking around for venues and places to play. You know, that's one of the good things about me having a teaching job is that it opens up these different avenues for playing at, you know, schools and with different colleagues and stuff like that. And we're hoping to do a collaboration with percussion again soon. So, you know, it's a very, versatile project. And little by little, we're making that project grow.
Wow, you know what? You could actually make me dizzy because there is a lot that you're doing.
Yeah, it makes me dizzy sometimes too.
do you keep people abreast on your Facebook page or at your website about what's happening or what to expect, or where's the best place we can find you to get the information on the updates for you?
You know, I mean, I do post up on Facebook, but most of the pertinent stuff I always try to put up on the website first,
which is,
you know, DarylYokley.com, and, you know, I'll post news about new projects and stuff, and I have my calendar on there as well, so that's one of the advantages of visiting there is you can actually see the performance schedule up there.
Oh, good. I am so full of questions, and I know that our hour is coming to a close. I'm intrigued by some of the titles and certainly the music on The Void. One of the songs that I heard that I didn't have initially that really struck me was a song that seems personal, and I'll ask, Walter's tune.
Oh, yes, yeah, that's a blues in that I wrote in 5/4. I just kind of came up with that bass line and then wrote the melody over it. But it's a tune dedicated to my grandfather on my dad's side, who I never met because he passed away before I was born. But I heard he was a great bass player in the Chicago area, so, you know, that's why it's kind of the tune's based off of the bass line. It's kind of a tribute to him.
It's so weird, Daryl. Maybe you've noticed this, or maybe it's one of those situations where it could possibly be a chick thing. I don't know. But it just seems like whenever there is a name within a song, you can feel an extra measure of love coming from the song. And I could feel it.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. You know, I'm glad to hear when emotions come across in the music, because, I mean, that's the end goal at the end of the day, you know, is to make the listener come across feeling, you know, have an emotional reaction to it rather than just listening passively like, oh, okay, that's another song.
Can anybody do that these days? I mean, what is the point of listening to music? It's just got to stir something in you. I don't really know, maybe you do, of anybody who has it as background these days, because it's just so important. People are turning out heart and soul kinds of projects, and, you know, listening to the void, it's making me, again, I'll go back to that, feel as though each song is its own story. So when somebody is deciding on music to buy, you know, you want to be able to say to them, oh, you have to get The Void because it's just so outstanding. But here it is. Music is such a personal connection, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is, you know, and if you don't get that personal connection, you know, across, then, you know, it's it kind of makes it not really worth it, at least for me, you know. It's, we all have, some artists might have different reasons for creating it, and, you know, I don't doubt there's some that do it for just monetary things, you know, have a formula for making money, and, you know, that's great for them. But for me, I definitely want to connect with people and make something positive happen when they do listen to my music, you know.
Yeah, I definitely get that from you. It just seems like you're on a music mission as opposed to having a step up in your career. So good for you. That's why.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That's why people are drawn to you, because they sense that. It's wonderful that you are able to make a living, as you said, but to be able to really want to make the connection to people, that is everything. So further proof that you are an old soul, if you're thinking about your grandfather who you never knew and wrote a song about him, that suggests that you've got a whole lot more on your mind these days than the next buck that turns up at a gig. So.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, definitely, you know, the wheels are turning always, you know, so it makes for some really good deep sleep, you know.
And that's it. You got to be able to sleep at night, so.
Oh, exactly, you know, otherwise, you know, you start running on fumes. So, yeah, it's definitely important to keep that balance going.
For sure. And I think that you'll always have it because, you know, you said something real sweet about your dad the other day, and apparently he was a real big influence on you, and there was a close connection to your dad. Once you have that family rooting early on, you're going to be fine. So I'm anxious to see what's going to happen to you down the road, Daryl. I'm tickled. I don't have a right to say this, but I'm proud of you.
Oh, thank you. No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. That does mean a lot to me. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And maybe we can do this again when the next project kicks in. We can hang out. This would be great.
Oh, yes, definitely looking forward to it. And like I said, hopefully we'll make our way down to your area this year soon with Sound Reformation and do a live concert.
Well, look, you sent me an extra little package of a CD. I know right where that's going. So be advised. You'll get the second chapter of what develops with that CD, okay?
Oh, so, yeah, even just on a nice vacation, I wouldn't mind hanging out in Baltimore, too.
Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah. Definitely. A few of us will show you off at the different venues, and we'll hook you up, whether it's socially or whether it's in a situation where you get to play at a venue, for sure. Just keep me posted. We'll be ready.
Oh, okay. Sounds great. Looking forward to it.
All right, Daryl. Thank you so much. Of course, we're going to play Walter's tune to close, if that's okay with you.
Oh, that is. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Thanks for spending an hour. I love that when that happens, and I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you. Have a good day.
You too, Daryl.
Okay. Take
bye-bye.
Care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Daryl Yokley, and this is from his really very cool, creative, brave, and visionary album called The Void. It's Daryl Yokley's sound. I had said Reformation, but he calls it Reformation. And you know what? I like the sound of that. That's a difference. This is Walter's tune on Hyper Jazz.
that what you wanted, Alfred?
Compliment what she does, send her roses just because. If it's violin she loves, let them play. Dedicate her favorite song and hold. Memory. If you need her so much more, why don't you say? Maybe she has it in her mind that she's just wasting her time. Ask her to stay.
Go on for another 3-4 minutes, it would be all right. Woo! James Ingram, Quincy Jones putting that thing together. Quincy had one more album left for A&M. He was ready to ditch the joint, and he tapped James Ingram to do a couple of songs for The Dude back in 1981. Who knew that James Ingram would be so big. Oh, my gosh. And A&M, wasn't Herb Alpert ecstatic? Half of that A&M label. Man, he is still counting change from this CD. Whew, good stuff. Now, look, we were supposed to play this song the other day, and that was when Geneva Renee and Micah Chevalier and Anita King were on the show, because it just seemed to stand to reason that we would play something very romantic in regard to Valentine's Day. All three of those ladies are having a Valentine's Day event in Silver Spring at Firehouse One. But I played another James Ingram song instead, and I wanted to make mention of the fact that James has a birthday coming up, and as a two-time Grammy Award winner, he deserves to have a little praise thrown his way. He's going to be 62, 2 days after Valentine's Day on the 16th, and man, just can't say enough about the voice and the songwriter, though he didn't write that song, producer and instrumentalist, just an absolute feather in Quincy Jones's cap, that's for sure. The other song on the Dude that James sings, by the way, is Just Once. I think that you'll know that song. Something you may not have known, and Matt just made mention of this in the chat room, because he thought that the beginning lick that Hank Jones had in the Cannonball Adderley song that you heard in this set was reminiscent of Ray Charles. James Ingram played for Ray Charles at one time. Yes, early in his career, and then he decided to pursue that singing vein. And we're all so thankful. Oh, James, can't even say enough. 100 Ways. Some people cannot stand that song, I have to say. I don't know why. Maybe to them it might sound a little sexist. But there is a female that put a part to that song, too. So you really have no reason to complain. It's romance. It's Valentine's Day coming up. My gosh. What else did we hear? Cannonball Adderley, One for Daddy O. Brother Nat wrote that song for DJ Holmes Daddy O Daily in Chicago. Very big at the time. And Cannonball, this musical project that he turned out in 1958 when he was still with the Miles Davis Sextet was so monumental on Blue Note Records that it became one of those Penguin Guide for Jazz core collection recommendations. Yes. Not 1958, the original, and then in 1999, there was a bonus track included in the remastered set. And that particular track was Bangoon, also identified as Allison's uncle. And the situation is that Nat Adderley's wife had a little girl named Allison, and Hank Jones thought it was a cool thing to write a song about the whole vibe of that time. So, yeah, Hank Jones on piano, Sam Jones on bass, Art Blakey on drums, Cannonball doing his thing, Nat doing his, and Miles Davis as sideman, which was a very rare set of circumstances. And then you could hear Miles at the end. Just love that song. One for Daddy-O from Something Else. Hey, let's play some Jaco Pastorius. Is that okay with you? Haven't heard some Jaco for a while, and I was thinking about him because actually he came to mind when our friend Sean was on the show several days ago, and I wanted to dig a little deeper. Jaco, of course, no longer with us, but in his short life, 35 years, he left a big, fat mark. Now, when you get him together with Herbie Hancock and company, this is what it sounded like back in 1976. This is from Jaco Pastorius, and the song is called Continuum on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. Oh, yes, let's continue with that vibe. This is Hybrid Jazz.
All right. If I gave you my love, I'd tell you what I'd do. I'd expect a whole lot of love out of you. You got to be good to me.
up. Oh, my gosh. Hey, if ever two people were supposed to sing, let me tell you, right there, Kevin Whalum and Wendy Moten. Yes, sir. Man, if you remember, and hearing that may have obliterated some the memory of Dana Owens and Al Green singing that song, a.k.a. Dana Owens, Queen Latifah, because we got some Memphis soul that's strong and sure right there. We got Kevin Whalum and Wendy Moten, who, ladies and gentlemen, does not get enough props. That voice is so magnificent. And when it's under the right circumstances, and I'm so glad that we can expect some projects, I believe, for both of them. If I heard correctly, I saw Wendy do a video, and I could have sworn she said both Kevin and she have projects coming in the spring. Is that right? Man, Simply Beautiful, the name of that. Brand new as of the 31st. So you best believe that we'll be playing that another time or two and then getting the word on the CD when it's completed. Wendy said that she'll do the show, so I'm excited about that. And actually, this time last year, we had Kevin Whalum on Hybrid Jazz, right on Valentine's Day, from what I can remember. He was doing a car interview. He was traveling. We didn't know that the day before we were even going to have him, but he just decided that he was going to call because he did have the time, and it was just fabulous. Tim Green first, and then it was Kevin Whalum. Really good day. Oh, man, that song. Larry Carlton from 1986, Alone But Never Alone, the name of the album, Smiles and Smiles to Go, which was huge for Larry. Oh, gosh, and I'm so tickled because I see that he's playing the Dubai Jazz Festival on Valentine's Day. Yes! And then he's going to be at the Blue Note in New York and then Spaghettini's in May. Now, I don't have this confirmed, but I'm relatively sure that Larry, at the age of 65, is going to be a new daddy. Yes. So I'll have to do some digging as to when the due date is, and I won't say any more than that. That's just so cool. Oh, my gosh. He's looking really happy these days, so we'll put a finger on that page or a bookmark, if you will, and tell you more. Jaco Pastorius, born John Francis Anthony Pastorius, bass legend. I don't have to tell you about that. Yeah. Start playing the bass at age 13, and actually, he loved baseball. He really loved the umpire, Jaco Conlin. And one day, Jaco decided to, and he wasn't Jaco then, but he decided that he wanted to be called that, J-O-C-O, just like his favorite baseball umpire. But then the pianist, Alex Darkey, addressed him as Jaco, J-A-C-O, in a letter correspondence. And Jaco thought, well, if Alex is going to call me that with that spelling, that's the way I'm going to call myself. So Jaco was born in Norristown, PA, yay, right down the street from Jenkintown, where yours truly was raised. And then his family moved to Florida. So much transpired. Oh, my. He was playing drums just like his dad. His dad was also a big band singer. And Jaco injured his wrist at the age of 13. So he switched from drums to bass because he could do that. And boy, did he ever do that. Just amazing that so many love and absolutely revere him. 1976, his debut, Jaco Pastorius, Continuum was the name of that track, produced by Bobby Columbine, who was from Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And Alex Darkey was on this particular session, too, with Lenny White on drums and Don Elias on congas. Man, that was good stuff. Herbie and Jocko. Love to hear that. Listen, we've had some deaths already in January, and I wanted to make mention of two. We expected Pete Seeger's news to come. He was in his 90s, after all. What a life. What a legacy. Legendary. My God. What will the world do? And then close on the heels of Pete Seeger, here's Philip Seymour Hoffman, which we did not expect. And man, 46 years old, did I think of a couple of songs that it just helped for the tears because they flowed. You don't expect such brilliance and such a life force to leave so early. But that's what happened, and I hope with all my heart that he's resting in peace. I thought about this Joshua Redman song, and I was thinking about Joshua anyway because he and Joe Sample both share a birthday on February 1st. So Joshua released a CD last year called Walking Shadows, and Brad Meldow thought it might be a good idea. They got their heads together, and they really loved this song. And since everybody's talking about the Beatles these days, about the real big celebration of the anniversary on the Ed Sullivan Show and coming to the States, this just hit me right between the eyes, all of it. So here is Joshua Redman and Company doing the Beatles song Let It Be on Hyper Jazz. Thank you. gorgeous. Oh, Eric Essex and Foot Soldiers from Evolution. Mm. Time that outro music. Daoud, you got your outro music, baby? Usually it's the intro music that we hear, but not the outro. Eric Essex, by the way, I have to tell you this. He has a new project coming up for the Eric Essex Foundation for the Arts and Education, the Eric Essex Jazz Escape. So if you go to jazzescape.com, you'll learn all about it. I had no idea. This is going to be spectacular. Woo! It's going to be Labor Day weekend, and he will have more about it as the days unfold. Hopefully he'll be on the show and talk about it. Yes, and what you heard from Evolution, you know about the CD, Healing and Beautiful Positivity, about his beloved Birmingham. So just had to play it, as I had to play Joshua Redman with Brian Blade and Larry Grenadier and Brad Meldow from Walking Shadows and Let It Be. On Thursday, you are going to hear Russell Blake and Nat Cohen right here on Hyper Jazz. Thank you so much for your time today. God bless you. Thank Matt Williams for being in the show. Mr. Williams, thank you very, very much. And thanks to all who have supported Hyper Jazz. We'll talk to you on Thursday.